adjourns here.
Let the record show that the Community and Regional Affairs Committee was convened at 8:06 a.m. Today we have present Representative Olson, Representative Reinbold, Representative Quito, and my co-chair, Representative Nagyak. I'd also like to recognize our staff today. There is Chris, the House Recording Secretary, and Lori, our LIO moderator, as well as our CRA committee staff, Lisa Vaught and Kimberly Clark. Please turn off your cell phones. Today on the agenda is HB 238, Alaska Grown Purchase Reference, and HB 317, Traffic Control Devices Near Schools. Is there, is Representative Tuck or a representative from his office here to put himself or herself, as the case may be, on the record? Would you like to come up here?
We're twins.
We had 238 first, but Kendra, you're up here now, so we're going to do 317 first.
Good morning. For the record, Kendra Kloster, staff to Representative Tuck. The representative sends his apologies that he cannot make it today, but says thank you for hearing the bill. And I believe before you, you have a CS.
I do have a CS.
If you'd like, I can go ahead and go through the changes on what we've done with that.
Okay, why don't we have somebody move the CS for purposes of discussion?
Madam Chair, I moved for the committee substitute on House Bill number 238.
The CS for House Bill 317.
We're on 317. Sorry, on 4317. Never mind. Thank you.
Let's have a brief at ease.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move for the committee substitute for House Bill 317 as a working document.
To adopt it as a working document. I'm going to object for purposes of discussion. So, Kendra, would you like to explain the differences between the CS and the bill?
Yes. And just first of all, I want to say we've had multiple conference meetings with Jeff Stark, who's the Assistant AG, Doug Gardner, and DOT to make sure that we got the language that we needed to basically do what the bill had intended, which to put traffic control devices, whether they're signs or lights, around all the different schools. So there is some additional language just to making sure we're getting to that point. So Section 1 was added in to update the uniform system of tracking, marking, and posting. It is based on some advice from DOT, just trying to update those definitions and making sure that we are putting in regulations of placing installation for the necessary markings. Section 2 is updating 1910.040, which is also adding in the definition for school, which is giving under our new definition of reflating and for our public schools and charter schools to making sure that we're putting school zones. And the same goes for Section 3 and Section 4. We're actually updating the 19050. And both of those, just so you know, 19040 and 050 are updating the marking and postings and signals. So it's just letting them know that we need to use our definition of school, which is a little bit broader, of saying that we needed to cover our charter schools and public schools and religious schools. Now getting to Section 5, it's similar in what it was in the previous bill, of saying that we needed to put markings in schools and school zones, just having the different types of devices. And Section 6 is our definition of school, which remains the same.
And so those are the differences.
Yes, it's just clarification, really, on what we needed to do, was making sure that we are allowing DOT the ability to use all the different types of traffic control devices, whether they're lights, signage, signs. So it just gives them the ability to making sure that they can use a number of different things to mark the schools as appropriate.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. At ease. Did we? On the record. So public testimony remained open the last time. I see we have two people on the line to ask questions to. That's Jeff Stark from the Attorney General's office and Francie Jeff Stark from the Attorney General's office for this bill. Is there any other public testimony on this bill? Okay. Well, any committee comments? I'm intending to hold this bill because we have just gotten this work draft right now. My understanding was that there was going to be somebody here from the DOT
yes,
to talk about the fiscal implications of this.
Chair Ledoux, yes, there is. Connie McKenzie is here, and within our conversations and when making changes to the bill, when working with DOT and the AG's office, they said that the fiscal note will drop dramatically, whether they estimated about a quarter, but they did not give any specific numbers at this point until they said that a CS was adopted from the committee that they would not do an updated fiscal note. And that was just what I was told from Mary Soroki at DOT. But Connie is here to answer any questions from the department.
I'd like to ask Connie some questions, and I don't know, maybe some of the other folks here would also.
Good morning. For the record, I'm Connie McKenzie, and I'm the legislative liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
So what's the status with respect to the fiscal note?
Our traffic and safety engineers are working on reviewing the CS and getting a new fiscal note out.
Okay, so we've adopted, we've moved to adopt this for mm-hmm. purposes of discussion. If I remove my objection and we adopt the fiscal, we adopt this new CS, not necessarily move the bill, but adopt the CS, will you be able to get us the fiscal note before the next meeting, sometime next week?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. So I will remove my objection to adopting this for purposes of discussion, but we're going to hold the bill until sometime when we meet again. Thank you. Okay. The next bill is HB 238, Alaska Purchase Preference, and my apologies for having things out of order. I read them that way.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going to pass something out to your committee aide. If Lisa, I could hand off the document. Thank you.
Okay, there you go.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. I'm Representative Garantar, serve House District 17 in Anchorage, and thank you so much for hearing House Bill 238 this morning. As an introduction to the bill, I think most of us have been noticing there's quite a trend in our state for Alaska-grown produce and Alaska-made products, and a lot of interest in supporting the agriculture industry as evidenced by new farmers markets popping up, new CSAs, which are community-supported agriculture ventures, and even farming in some of our more rural communities. In the Bethel region, Mr. Tim Myers has become, you know, very well-known for his efforts to grow out in that more harsh climate. So there's a lot of interest in Alaska agriculture, and I share that interest and have been working with farmers over a number of years in my time in Alaska, and have helped start a couple of the Anchorage Farmers Market as well as the Alaska Organic Association. And in that time, you know, we've looked at how could the state support the Alaska agriculture industry. And sometimes we get it right, sometimes we get it wrong, but I think today we're talking about something where we can really do it right. And right now we have something that's called the 7% statute, and that states that if Alaska-grown fisheries or agricultural product is within 7% of the price for a product that could be purchased from outside, you know, through mostly the large-scale vendors that most, you know, institutions or large state agencies would purchase from, then you can buy the Alaska-grown price. So it kind of gives some flexibility in that price range to allow for the Alaska-grown product to be a little more costly. And over the years, what we've kind of learned through this process is that that may not be enough price flexibility to really capture the Alaska-grown market. We spend $2.5 billion annually on food. Unfortunately, though, only 5% of that is on food that's grown in Alaska. So it's estimated that if just 30% of that market became Alaska-grown products, it could grow our economy by $750 million a year. So a lot of economic opportunity there. And what we hope to accomplish with this bill by increasing from 7 to 12% and giving 5% more in that price range is an opportunity for state agencies, municipalities, and school districts to purchase more Alaska-grown products. And I think a good analogy to use here is if you think of a shopping center starting out, you're looking for anchor tenants. And once you have those anchor tenants, then you can go and build the boutique stores that serve fewer clientele. Well, in growing our agriculture industry and sort of our food security system in Alaska, what we're hoping is by allowing for more institutional purchases, that this would be those anchor tenants that would then allow the farmers, you know, with that reliable purchaser to expand their farming operation to be able to produce maybe more for local grocery stores or farmers markets or direct services to clients. So that's what we hope to accomplish with this bill. This is a priority of the Alaska Food Policy Council. And I've worked with them. I think we hopefully will have a couple people online to testify and support and talk about their work. And so it's consistent with goals they have. That group has brought together people related to health, agriculture, you know, food security, and really tried to look at ways that we can support the agriculture industry in Alaska. The second part of the bill was to request a special was to put in an audit provision so that we could more closely track the purchasing that's taking place through the, at least in this case, state agencies, because that's our jurisdiction. Unfortunately, you know, municipalities and school districts are not required to give us all of their purchasing records. But we wanted to do an audit to see what's happening and give us an opportunity to work more closely with departments in making those purchases. And so the original version of the bill has the first section is about the audit provision. And then the second section and the sections that follow are all changing from 7 to 12%. In conversations with Legislative Budget and Audit, they suggested that we didn't need the language in the bill, that instead we could request a special audit and that would suffice and we'd get the same information. So what, thank you, Lisa, the committee aide was sharing was a copy of the special audit request that we've submitted to LBNA. And I don't know if we'll have anyone from Ledge Audit on the phone, but we worked closely with them in drafting the language and identifying sort of the same information that was in the bill. But again, at their suggestion, because they have capacity to conduct a special audit, they suggested doing this. It would keep the fiscal note at zero. And so that would be, you know, one way that we could hope to move forward in this tight fiscal time. So with that, I would be open to any questions. I've worked with Representative Keto to draft an amendment that would remove the audit section of the bill, and so I think that amendment I saw was laying on the table, so at the right time we can perhaps discuss that. But I'll just close my comments with saying, I think, again, this is a great opportunity to help build our food system, and look forward to discussing this more with you.
So I don't understand why there'd still be money spent, though, whether or not the audit is in the bill or the audit is just simply a request to the legislative budget and audit. Money's still going to be spent. I mean, isn't this that just a way of avoiding the Finance Committee? As opposed to actually saving money?
Madam Chair, what we learned from Legislative Budget and Audit is they have capacity with their existing staff that are working on other audit requests, and this would be part incorporated into to their day-to-day work. And so it's not, you know, it's something they would accomplish. They get periodic requests like this from members of the legislature, and that's their role, is to fulfill these requests.
Representative Nagia.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, I agree that there's going to be consequences, financial consequences. You're going from 7% to 12%, so that's an increase in an amount you're going to be spent that different state agencies will be buying. So that's going to be an impact on that, from 7% to 12%. So there's a financial consequence to that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Through the Chair, Representative Nagyak, thank you. And when we look at the effective date, you'll notice there's a delayed effective date. We would like to, right now it has the 7 to 12% section of the bill becoming effective July 1, 2016. And we'd be interested in changing that to 2015. But if you think about the fiscal year in this legislature, we have already worked on the fiscal year for FY15. And so by delaying the effective date, there's an opportunity to work with the departments, review their purchasing records, try to facilitate those connections with farmers that might be able to meet some of their needs. And then where you would see the financial impact is in their budget request for a following year. And so that's where, if a department, you know, changes any of their purchasing habits, and because of having more flexibility with that price change from the 7 to the 12%, then that's where we would see that increase. It's not associated with the bill. The statutory change gives them the opportunity to pursue those products, but where we'd see the financial impact is if they did in fact change some of their purchasing, and then as a result that changed their overall budget for food purchasing.
I just feel uncomfortable that eliminating the fiscal note here is going to be eliminating the finance committee, and I think we're talking about, you know, probably a significant outlay of state dollars, and so that it should be going in front of the finance committee. Representative Keto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I don't know. I think the Legislative Audit Department does hundreds of audits every year. And this one would not be statutorily required because of the proposed amendment. I guess we haven't gotten into discussion of the amendment, but talking about the memo, I think, that was passed around, if the legislature, when it feels the need to collect information about the program, requests an audit, it's periodic, and it's not something that they have to put into their regular budget, because it's not something I think they would expect to happen every year.
I understand.
Through, Madam Chair, if I could respond, that's my understanding, and we worked closely with her. There was no intent to eliminate a finance referral. This was actually at the suggestion of the Legislative Budget and Audit, saying this is what we do. You should just submit a special audit request. We can accomplish what you hope to, and then if you feel the need to do what, you know, later and have ongoing audits, then perhaps it'd be appropriate to happen in the statute. But at this time, that you should take advantage of the opportunity to just submit a special audit request. It's in line with our regular work, and at their suggestion, that's what we did. So it really was not, and like I say, intent to avoid finance or anything. I do think there could be financial implications, not in this budget year, but again, because they'll have the opportunity, then if they can find the products. Again, we have a little bit of that chicken or egg in terms of trying to move forward with larger purchasers of our agricultural products. So we wanted to have a little bit of time to work with departments, work with farmers, kind of move through that process and see where those new relationships could be built. And then that's when, you know, they may need to seek additional funds because purchasing lettuce from an Alaska grown farmer, you know, is a little more expensive than purchasing lettuce from Cisco Food Systems, where they were purchasing before.
Thank you. Representative Keto.
Madam Chair, I'm wondering if now might be the time to actually move that amendment because we are talking about the audit, so...
I think that would be quite appropriate.
So, Madam Chair, the amendment before you is numbered 28-LS1167-U1. I would like to move that as Amendment 1 for House Bill 238.
Okay, and I'm going to object for purposes of discussion, so let's continue the discussion here on it. Would you like to explain your amendment, Representative Keto?
Yes, Madam Chair. So what Amendment 1 does is it actually deletes Section 1, which is the annual audit requirement. And that gets back to the discussion we were having that when the legislature needs information about the effectiveness of this program, that a request would be made to LBNA to have an audit performed for this Alaskan-produced program.
Thank you. Any questions or discussion about the amendment? Well, I'm going to remove my objection to the amendment. So, hearing no other objection, I guess the amendment becomes now part of the bill. So, any other committee discussion before I open up public testimony? Okay, then I am going to open up public testimony. We have... online, Francie Havemeyer from the Division of Agriculture, and I think you're just there to answer questions. Is that correct? Ms. Havemeyer, are you just there to answer questions?
Ms. Havemeyer, are you just there to answer questions?
Yes, Madam Chair, I am.
Thank you. We have Danny Constantine, and please identify yourself for the record and tell us with whom you're affiliated.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Danny Constantine. I'm the State Executive Director for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Farm Service Agency here in Alaska. I'm also a member of the Governing Board of the Alaska Food Policy Council, and I also sit on the Governor's Alaska Food Resource Working Group, which is basically like a sub-cabinet formed by the Governor as a result of the passage of HCR 1 by the Alaska Legislature last year, which asked him to form such a group. I'm here to testify in strong support of House Bill 238. I wanted to make a few comments about both the Alaska Food Resource Working Group that I sit on along with eight other commissioners, you know, state commissioners, and the purpose of that working group, again, urged by the passage of HCR 1 by the legislature, is to a number of purposes, but one of them is to provide recommendations. I was just reading from the administrative order that formed this group, provide recommendations for policy changes that would increase the use of locally grown and harvested food within the state, within state and local institutions, agencies, and schools. So that's one of the objectives of the Governor's Working Group, is to encourage more purchasing by state agencies. And so I think HB 238 is consistent with some of the recommendations, some of the purpose of the Governor's Working Group. I also wanted to make some comments from the perspective of the Alaska Food Policy Council. The council was formed a few years ago, and it is a group of about over 200 kind of stakeholders from around Alaska, from Barrow to Ketchikan, and in many different parts of the state, and in many different sectors. These are people who care about the Alaska food system and are looking at policy recommendations for how to strengthen the food system so that it serves Alaskans better, so that it provides healthier Alaskans and builds our economy and makes us more secure in terms of being prepared for emergencies. When the council developed a strategic plan a few years ago, identified some goals, what it was striving for, and it also identified some priority actions. What were sort of some low-hanging fruit? What were some policies that we could recommend right away? One of them was the enforcement of the preference statute. And so right away we identified this as, if there was one thing that the state could do to build a stronger food system, would be to act as a stronger purchaser and to drive the market from the procurement side, and recognizing that the private sector, the fishermen and farmers and producers of food in Alaska, once the state was driving the demand, the private sector could come in and really meet that demand, and that was one of our strategies. So, Madam Chair, that's my testimony in terms of why the Food Policy Council is in support of the legislation that would not only increase the enforcement of the existing statute, but increase the actual preference, which I think would also create a larger incentive for state agencies to purchase locally grown food, and the impact that that would have to improve the health of Alaskans, to improve the economy of Alaskans, and to improve our preparedness in case of emergency by producing more of our own food here in Alaska. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Constantine? Okay, I think we have Tom Meyer from the Division of General Services, but I think that is just to answer questions. Is that correct, Mr. Meyer?
Yes, Madam Chair, that is. I can answer any questions relating to the procurement process on it.
Thank you. And then it looks like we have Bryce Wrigley from the Alaska Farm Bureau, who does want to testify, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And please identify yourself for the record and tell us with whom you're affiliated.
My name is Bryce Wrigley. I am affiliated with the Alaska Farm Bureau. We represent about 350 families in Alaska that are engaged in farming and farm support. And I just wanted to testify in favor of HB 238. As a producer myself and as a grower, I also own Alaska Flower Company. That's F-L-O-U-R, not F-L-O-W-E-R. And so I am engaged in the production of food. One of the challenges that farmers face is access to market. As you know, the 90%, 95% maybe even of the people in Alaska shop at the big box stores and are engaged in a distribution system that is well established, and it's fairly difficult to break into. And so in order to expand markets and through market expansion be able to justify increasing capacity, processing and growing capacity, then we need access to market. This bill that suggests the product preference rate and also monitors compliance by state agencies, state purchasing authorities, and encourages those markets, creates a market that is outside of that normal distribution channel, which is really important for us as we begin ramping up food production. I would encourage the committee to look at this not so much as a cost, as an investment. I think that food security is a strategic importance, not just an economic importance, although increasing a local food system would certainly benefit the state tremendously from an economic standpoint. And just as one example, of the 100-some thousand families that we have in Alaska, this is from an economist, that, and you can figure it out for yourself, you take the number of families in Alaska, if each of those families bought just $5 worth of local food every week, it would result in about $27 million a year, and that's just $5 a week. We can grow a lot more than what is being consumed in Alaska, and it would increase our food security, it would increase economic activity, especially in the rural areas, and all of that together would benefit the rural areas as far as development, stability, opportunity. And so I certainly encourage and appreciate Representative Carr's efforts to address this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Wrigley? And just as a matter of how, well, thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Wrigley. And just as a matter of housekeeping, we've had join us Representative Heron and Representative Foster. And I think we have one more person who wants to testify, and that's Allison Arians, who's here in the audience.
Thank you very much for letting me testify today.
And please identify yourself and tell us who you're representing.
Thank you. I'm Allison Arians, and I'm representing myself. I own Rise and Shine Bakery in Anchorage, Alaska. As many of you know, I'm here in Juneau from Anchorage this week to advocate for public school funding, but supporting locally grown products is also an issue that's very close to my heart. I own Rise and Shine Bakery, and in the summertime, I sell my whole grain sourdough bread at the South Anchorage Farmers Market. Our farmers markets in Anchorage have grown by leaps and bounds in the last 6 years, giving many more people easy access to wonderful, fresh, locally grown food. New and growing farmers markets have increased the demand for local produce, but it could be greater still. For 3 years, I co-owned and ran Glacier Valley Farm CSA with my farmer friend, Arthur Keyes. We were offering a local alternative to the very popular Full Circle Farms CSA that comes to Anchorage and I think all over the state. We kept it going for 3 years, but people got tired after a while of the same vegetables in the boxes every single week, cabbages, carrots, potatoes, and beets. And so we tried to encourage local farmers to try new things, to try to get, you know, fennel and leeks and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes that worked, but it takes a lot of time and energy sort of infrastructure, I think, for a farmer to really try new things. And we were just a small CSA business trying to lobby for them to grow different things. And so the nice thing about the state is that it's a much bigger much bigger customer compared to our little CSA. So I think that doing this, increasing this percentage will really offer more incentive to try new crops and grow that locally grown opportunity for the farmers. And as I've gotten involved in the school funding issue, I just wanted to say also I've been going to a lot of school board meetings. I went to the Alaska PTA convention last weekend, and I've heard a lot of presentations about all the new and creative ways that schools have been using these Alaska-grown products and, you know, salmon patties and new ways to cook potatoes and salad bar carts and that kind of thing. So it's exciting to me that we're able to use our locally grown foods in our schools. So I just like to say let's keep up the good momentum and this growing movement of farmers markets and locally grown food and grow our state and municipality markets for local Alaskan food as well.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Well, then thank you very much for your testimony. Do we have any committee discussion?
Actually, Madam Chair, there is one other change that I think we were looking at making to the bill, so I'm wondering if I might be able to offer a very small conceptual amendment.
Go right ahead.
Madam Chair, on page 3 of the bill, at the very bottom, there's Section 7, the effective date. Since we are removing the audit provisions of the bill, I think we're going to want to change that 2016 effective date, 2016, to 2015, so that the agencies and municipalities and school districts can begin in this current this next fiscal year begin to utilize the new percentage. Mm-hmm. So I would offer changing on line 30, page 3, 2016 to 2015.
And I'll
amendment number, conceptual amendment number 2.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Any discussion from the committee on this? All right, I will remove my objection. Is it my understanding that right now this bill does not have a fiscal note?
Yes. Okay. That's true.
And I'm going to hold this bill. I mean, this bill has some significant financial implications, as I see it. And I'm really uncomfortable moving a bill which has financial implications without seeing a fiscal note. So, mm-hmm.
Well, if I can just respond to that, I appreciate that, Madam Chair. And we have been working with Ms. Chris Curtis over at Legislative Budget and Audit, and I think the snafu here was when we decided we would do the amendment to remove the audit provision, she thought that a fiscal note wouldn't be necessary, at least from Legislative Budget and Audit, and so didn't prepare one. But we will quickly work with her and get that remedied.
But even if a fiscal note isn't necessary from Legislative Budget and Audit, if you're increasing something from 7% to 12%, it would seem like that's going to have a financial implication, which would mandate having a fiscal note. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Have there been any schools, for example, that have testified or sent in any correspondence saying how this might affect them to that point?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, we have talked to the Farm to School program. And like all other agencies, this would provide more price flexibility when they're going out to purchase those Alaska-grown products. They already have a special grant through the department for funding for that program, and we reauthorized that, and it's in the budget to be reauthorized for next year. So they have a set amount of money to spend on that program, and what this would say is within the budget that you have, you know, now you have additional products that you can look at because, for example, maybe you couldn't buy the potatoes before because they were more than 7%, but now because they're 10% more, you know, and the statute says up to 12, you could purchase them. So it wouldn't be additional funding. It would be how they manage the funding that they have and what products they choose to purchase with that. I hope that makes sense. And to speak to the comment about that, in determining the fiscal impact, this wouldn't require that these state agencies do that. It gives them the flexibility to purchase those products if they are more expensive. And as we've discussed it, at this time, they don't have a price tag to put on that because they need to look and see if those products are available. So as a couple of the testifiers kind of discussed, you know, trying to create a market, it may be that the products are not available, but this is a step towards getting more market access and having more products available.
All right. Thank you very much. And I neglected to close public testimony, so public testimony is now closed. Any further committee discussion? Well, thank you very much, and we stand adjourned, and it is 8:44.